It's complete now to give a talk about something or other. And it is wonderful that I haven't got a clue what I'm going to talk about. But just, oh, maybe just the results of a peaceful mind. Just in your daily life, relationships, problems of the world and stuff. That when I was young, I must admit that I'm not young anymore. Sometimes when people tell me that I'm getting old, I say, no, that's wrong. I already am old. But you're not really worried about anything, which is a beautiful thing. And one of the reasons is because you have this great resource inside of peace and quiet and stillness. And having built that up over so many years. And sometimes people build up their superannuation, their investments, money and property and stuff. And people sometimes ask me at my age, I'm 68, now 69 next month and a half. That's not that long. 69 soon. And said, what have I got saved up? I've got a fortune inside. A fortune of peace and stillness and kindness, wisdom. That's where I keep my superannuation. And it really works as well. Because look, what do you need money for? Get something to eat. And sometimes you're just kind. And, you know, we have this tradition in Buddhist monasticism to rely upon alms food. And it can be such a beautiful tradition. What comes to mind is when we were having one of these big conferences in Perth many years ago, one of the young monks said, I'm not going to have the lunch which was provided free for all monks and nuns. He said, I brought my bowl into Perth. I'm going to just go and see if I can get any alms around. So he went there just walking through St. George's Terrace and around the area to see what would happen with his alms bowl. No other food. And he had these wonderful experiences. The one which almost brought me to tears, I must admit, because sometimes I get teary because I see some such beautiful actions in this world. There was like a homeless man, and he had a sandwich, which he'd gone down the way, got his sandwich from. And he saw the monk, and he stopped the monk and said, please stop and accept my sandwich. And the monk sort of opened his bowl lid and took a sandwich. Because when we go on alms round, we never ask for anything. We don't say, give me this, give me that. If somebody wishes to put some food into your bowl, they will do. And that's what he ate for his lunch that day. Not much. Where it came from was so wonderful and beautiful. We always feel that if somebody does a wonderful, kind, generous, sometimes you may say stupid act. That homeless man needed the food? No. A homeless man needed the opportunity to be kind. And that was even more. You can get another sandwich somewhere. The opportunity to be kind and generous and do something from the heart. To actually to give. Instead of worrying about getting. Was something which was inspiring to that homeless man. And something which that monk would never forget. So some of the ways that we can survive in our world. And also that insurance, we were talking about insurance in executive committee just beforehand. Now with our insurance, what actually insurance do you really need? Sometimes, you know, you may be in a bushfire and your house burns down. Sometimes your car is damaged and, oh, it's just maybe so hard to get sort of compensation or get things all paid off and fill out forms and stuff. But you know that the best insurance is always your friends and family. People who care about, they come and help you. If you haven't got a place to stay, it can be a friend, an aunt or somebody, they will look after you. There's a fellow who used to come here many years ago. These are stories I haven't told for a long time now. But he had a reasonably good relationship, but after a while it didn't work out, and so they got divorced. And after he got divorced, that's when he started coming here. And he told me that he used to have this pedigree dog, and being divorced and just staying in a small apartment somewhere, that he couldn't look after the dog. So he saw if he could find other owners of a similar breed so he can give the dog to somebody else to be looked after. And that actually got him in contact with this old lady. And the old lady didn't want a dog, but she said, well, if you don't mind that I don't have any transport, and I do have some business every now and again, going to see the doctor, or going to see the dentist in town, and it's just too difficult for me to get the bus. And he said, because he was a kind person, he said, oh, well, I'll give you a lift whenever you want. He was owning his own business, running his own little show, not making very much, but, you know, it was getting by. And he said that one day, after maybe a year or two of him giving her a lift, he said he always loved serving. He always loved whenever she called. He said, is it too much problem? He said, no, I'm very happy to take time away from the office and take you to where you need to go. You ever notice when you are kind, when you just say, well, it's not for me, it's for somebody else, you get so much good energy. I always do that because some of the stuff which I do, I shouldn't really be doing it, but it's a wonderful thing to be able to help someone else and do something else, and do something which is sometimes really, really stupid. I mean, stupid, but kind. And before I go back to this gentleman, what happened with this old lady, that I remember just sitting here on a Friday night many years ago, and that just before the talk, I got a call from Singapore that the husband of one of our supporters had really helped us so many times, even just when we got Jhana Grove for our retreat center, we just didn't have enough money to pay the bills. And when I went over to Thailand, she said, how much? I said, here's the check. She did it. And a little thing or a big thing like that, I always remember that. People really helped me, got me out of difficult situations. I will never forget you. Her husband died. And they called up, I think, in the morning of Friday. And said, can you come, please, tomorrow for the funeral on Saturday? I said, that's impossible. I've got to give a talk on a Friday night. I got so many things to do. It's a really stupid thing to try, and I probably won't even get a flight. So I rang up Singapore Airlines and got a flight. Leaving right after the Friday night talk. That's just stupid. I just arrived in Singapore Saturday morning, just really tired, half asleep, but did the funeral for her. I love doing things like that. It's absolutely ridiculous. I should look after my health, but actually my health was great. Why is that? Even if you don't have any sleep, you know, and you've still got full energy. It is because you're getting into a source of energy and power, which is from kindness, from love, from giving, from just doing something for the sake of someone needs you. And so, back to this gentleman who used to come to our Buddhist society many years ago. This old lady called him and said, look, I'm sorry to disturb you again, but I've got to go and see my lawyer, and it's just really hard getting sort of the buses and stuff and where my lawyer lives, and I'm very old, it's very hard to walk. So yeah, no worries, I'm delighted to take an hour off work and then just come and look after you. I enjoy it. And so he took her to the lawyer, and he usually parked his car outside. I said, no, I really need you to come in. And I thought to sign some documents and be a witness or something. And then found the reason why she wanted to have him in the lawyer's office. And he told me this here many years ago. He said it was because she was making him the sole beneficiary of her will, which was a lot of money, basically a couple of million or something. And he just was blown away. You know, all he always did was he was just kind for the sake of being kind. No more than that. But she recognized, you know, his kindness. She said, this is the sort of guy I would like to enjoy my wealth. And she died about 6 months later. I remember he was sitting here in front of me and said, the money's not important. What was really important to me was the kindness. And the fact that she valued this, what I was more than happy just to give her free for the rest of my life. That's the sort of thing which I invest my time in. And that's the sort of thing which doesn't matter about stock markets, or doesn't matter about investments in property and prices going up and exchange rates going down, and goodness knows it gets so confusing sometimes. But kindness, service, looking after one another, that is something which never sort of reduces in value. And it doesn't matter who that is. And sometimes, because you're being kind to someone, they just become your friend. Again, somebody reminded me of our first year when I first came to Perth 37 years ago now. And building just Bodhinyana Monastery, just building it ourselves, and just asking the plumbing shop. So I don't mind, I don't know if it's illegal for me to say the names of the plumbing shops which we use, but that was Galvin's and Sons. But I don't mind saying that because they were just so nice. I went there and just said, look, these are the plans, help. And they spent just about half an hour just explaining to me. It's pretty simple. Because we couldn't afford a plumber. So I became the plumber. And they gave good advice. And, you know, I was a bit nervous when the health inspector came to check everything. And he looked at it and he said, pass. You did a good job. Well done. And that's our first sewage system. We got a few sort of drop-ins from the monastery here, that I can see the 1, 2, 3. That ablution block where you have showers, I built that one and did all the plumbing for that. And just, I was just so shocked. It passed the tests. And so that the next day, we got the bill for all the parts. And, you know, because I built it, I checked the bill. It was all in order. I got the treasurer to get the check so we could send the check to the plumbing place. But then I thought, well, these people really helped me. Show me how to do this. So I wrote a little letter. Maybe it's just a page letter, say thank you very much. You know, I think the worker was Fred. And it was in Osborne Park at the time, many years ago. He's probably retired a long time ago now. But thanks especially to Fred. You know, really helped me. Just amazing service. Thank you so much. And here's a check. And what happened next was I just sent it off to the office. And apparently I got this from Fred himself a couple of days later, that he never receives those letters with the checks, and that goes to the accounting department. And so someone in the accounting department opens that, and there was a letter inside along with the check. And apparently the person who opened the letter thought, oh no, not another complaint. Because the reason you laugh there, because the usual time when people write letters is to complain about something. When people do a good job, you take it for granted. And they saw the letter, and it was actually a very nice letter of praise. And so she took it to the head of accounts, who took it to the CEO of the company, the big boss of Galvin's and Sons at the time. And the big boss just picked up the phone and asked for Fred on the desk in Osborne Park. Galvin's office is a big company. And I know exactly that happened, because The CEO rang in the morning, and I visited in the afternoon. I visited in the afternoon to change a part over. The small part needed to be a bigger part. And as soon as I came in the shop, there was these two or three plumbers in front of me. These were big guys. In their shorts and singlets, waiting for their order. But as soon as I came in the shop, Fred took one look at me. Bob, come over here. And the other plumbers were really upset and angry. He said, I don't forget about why about those. You come up here. What can I get for you? And I was a bit surprised. And then his mate, the other person on the shop front, said, oh, Fred, it's your wife, he said. Call me his wife. The only reason that he said, because, that he said that the CEO had called him and about a couple of hours earlier in the morning to say, thank you, Fred. What a wonderful job you're doing there. Got a letter from one of your customers. This is the sort of thing we want in our company. Well done, Fred. How much are you earning an hour? And we gave him a rise right there. Increases salary. And that's why Fred was very loving to me. He said, come round the back. And there's a big sign there, customers are not allowed round the back. Come round the back. What do you want? And so we changed the part over, and there's maybe about $20 difference. And said, how much do we owe you? And with a big smile, which I'll never forget, he said, Brahm, nothing. And that was just a beautiful moment. That's all it was just one small act of kindness. Just writing a letter, being respectful. Wouldn't you like a letter from somebody if you really helped them, being kind to them? Somebody just calls you and says, thank you so much for bringing some cheese today, Nicholas. I ate that. I really need it. I was tired. Thank you. What does that do to you? Ooh. It does it to me. And so those acts of kindness, that is just my investments. And of course, whenever I need to recoup some of those payments, they're right there for me. And just people to look after you, to give you lifts, to make sure that you have enough food. One of the wonderful things about sort of the life of a monk or a nun is we don't need very much. And it's wonderful, so many people come and ask, like I'm just looking at a few of you, you've asked me, Ajahn Brahm, what can we get for you? What do you need? Please let me know. I want to give you something. I said, nothing. No, you must get something. I said, no. Because you know how hard it is to try and find something to get for a monk. Even once, I chatted somebody about this. He said, look, whatever you want. And I asked them, I said, okay, do you really trust me, my goodness? He said, yeah. So I said, give me a blank check. Signed. And they did. From their account. They signed the check, and there was nothing was to the Buddhist Society of West Australia, or to Bodhinyana Monastery, I forget which. They didn't put any amount on it. They said, put your own amount on it. Wasn't that wonderful? Have you ever received a blank check? I have. And I just kept it for a few days or a week, I forget how much, just because it was just a gesture, and I gave it back to them. Just they wouldn't cash a blank check or put money in it, because that's just not how we work. But what a beautiful thing that was, just because when there's that trust there and that friendship, that really means that we have something much more than that was $10, you owe me $15 back, and then $20 here. And have you ever done accounts and trying to balance everything? Oh. And sometimes, with our treasurer is here, this is here, really. It just drives you crazy, trying to balance everything and how much it costs and whatever. But how much does kindness cost? Do you ever run out of it if you give more and more and more and more? You never run out of kindness. The more you give, obviously, the more you have to help others, and it's impressive. With that kindness is forgiveness, because sometimes people forget to do things. Or sometimes they make mistakes. That's one of the things which I said last night, which Sean Nana sort of took on board. It's okay to make mistakes. It's a wonderful insight from my meditation. You don't always have to be perfect. And so I make mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes I make on purpose, like my robe falling off. People say, Ajahn Brahm, you're an old monk now. You should actually have learned after 45 years of being a monk to keep your robe on. Do you ever notice it always keeps falling off? Do you think that's on purpose? So I do not sort of intimidate too many other monks. It's my excuse. But whatever is, it's much more important to keep your kindness on instead of keep your robe on. And that joy, that happiness, that is more important than anything else. So sometimes people say, hey, what about your posture when you're meditating? Now, how many people just worry, they think they have to sit on a chair or sit on the ground or lay on the ground? What's the most important part of your body to be concerned about when you meditate? As far as I'm concerned, the only important part to be concerned about is the shape of your mouth. Turn the corners up, and it's much easier to get deep meditation. I'm a well-known meditation teacher, so I know what I'm talking about. Because sometimes, you know what happens? Teaching meditation, teaching retreats, especially. And our retreats here are no problem at all, because I've been teaching these for such a long time now. People understand roughly how to meditate. But sometimes I go overseas, or sometimes I talk to other people in other types of meditation traditions, and I'm scared to open my eyes in the middle of the meditation. The expressions on their face are scary. I'm being honest with you. I wonder how on earth can anyone get any deep meditation with a mug like that, a mug face like that. Impossible. And it's true, they can't. With a bit of kindness and joy, oh, your meditation takes off. Why? Because you're happy to be here. Where you are with what you've got, you're happy. Okay, this is an old story, but it's one of the favorite ones. Please put your hand up if you've heard this recently about the monk who went to teach in the prison, and they were asking him, what's it like being a monk in Buddhist monastery in Australia? How many haven't heard that? Have heard it recently? Only one or two of you. Two, three, four, five, six. Doesn't matter if you all put your hand up, I'm going to say it anyway. It's a funny story. And it just shows you what it's like to be a monk in our modern world, because it's true. What do you guys do, even like during COVID time? What is your routine? And my routine is I always get up around 4 o'clock in the morning. That's a problem for me. Because even last night, you know, I was here until, what time did we leave here? About 10 o'clock last night. Gave with Sean Nanup talk, and I just was listening most of the time for change, which is good. So I got back to the monastery 11 o'clock. And maybe 11:30, got into bed. And I thought, I'll have a sleep in this morning. I deserve a sleep in. It was just a long trip and a long being late. And of course, 4 o'clock, woke up. And I couldn't go to sleep again. So I was really tired this morning. But that doesn't matter. I had a good fun. So we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. At least you're supposed to. But if you don't, it doesn't really matter. You're not going to be sent away or banned or thrown out of the monastery. And that's just a general idea. Get up early in the morning. Meditating early in the morning is beautiful. It's one of the reasons why, is because, you know, it's cool and it's quiet. It's the quietest time of the day. In the evening, there's just always something going on. Sometimes, you know, you see people driving past the monastery, or hear them, hoons, doing burnouts and stuff. But that's just what people do. You can't stop them. They try to, but, yeah. So, but the morning time is always very fresh and cool, and it's like your time. Most of the world's asleep. So the world is free for you to enjoy. No one's around. So I love those mornings. So that's some of the best times to meditate, just for walking. And then, sort of, we told them at usually about 6:30 we have a breakfast. And, you know, the 1, 2, 3 people here that are working over in Bodhinyana Monastery, what type of breakfast we have? Don't say the breakfast this morning, that was huge. But usually, you know, I just have my Weetabix in a mug with some milk and a cup of tea. And those prisoners were just aghast. They were shocked. They say, wow, in prisons in Australia, you can get muffins, you can get pancakes, you can get bacon and eggs, you can get sausages, you can get vegetarian, you can get hoppers if you're from Sri Lanka. You can get whatever you want in the morning. I said, well, not in monastery. Well, okay. And then what do you do? And you know that we make you work very hard in monastery. Building work. At least you're supposed to anyway. Building work, cooking, or doing something. And yeah, people were surprised. You're only supposed to work in the morning, but you know that many monks and Amigarikas and stuff, we work in the afternoons as well. And we do lots of work there. And that's, you know, where we build monasteries, where we write the books, where we do all this stuff for you. So to look after you. And very often people write in, they've got some problems in their life. Can you please, you know, just help? And so we do as best we can, try and do some service. Sometimes by emails or by live streaming. And that was the downside of COVID. The downside of COVID for monks is people found out about live streaming. So I don't know how many live streaming talks I've given. Anyway, that's just my life. So we just do all the work and then we have our lunch. We have our lunch in one bowl. Ah, that's great, in one bowl. And it always happens. Every time. I mean, you took my bowl up this morning. And sometimes things always get mixed. I did have some gravy in there. And I think it did go on the biscuits. There were some chocolate chip biscuits. They were very nice biscuits. Especially with gravy on. I have some really weird concoctions sometimes. One of the weirdest ones I had, what was it? Spaghetti bolognese with... The other one with, like, strawberry ice cream on top. It was true. Because when I put the strawberry ice cream in my bowl, it was actually in a separate little part of the bowl. And then somehow or other, just, you know, taking it here, moving it there, it all got moved up and ended up on top of the spaghetti bolognese. How many people here have ever had spaghetti bolognese with strawberry ice cream on top? No one else. You don't know what you're missing. You haven't lived. It's actually really disgusting. But there we go. That's my life. But anyway, we're telling all this to the prisoners and more stuff about what about evening meal. We don't have an evening meal. Just a cup of tea, that's all. For me anyway. Add some chocolate maybe. Or some cheese today. Anyway, don't ask me why this. I'm allowed to have cheese outside of monastery, but not in monastery. Why? I don't know. But anyway, what time do you go to bed? Bed? We don't have beds. I sleep on the floor. It's really, I really recommend sleeping on the floor. Because I don't know that sometimes when you visit somebody else or you go to another place, you sleep on a bed. It's always really scary. I'm always scary of rolling and rolling and falling off. Sometimes I've done that. But in sleeping on the floor, you can roll whichever way you want. Keep on rolling and you never fall off. It's much more simple. Anyway, not to waste too much more time on this. But they say, we don't have beds. We just sleep on the floor, most of us. Oh, okay. And just telling them just how we live, and you know, a lot of that is pretty accurate, a lot of that is how I live, and they were just so shocked. One of them said this wonderful phrase, one of the prisoners, to the monk, he said, that's terrible in your monastery. They were really so concerned about the monk, just how harsh it is, how austere. That's terrible in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead? He didn't realize what he was saying. He was inviting the monk to stay in jail. That was in a Casuarina jail, you know, the high security, which was far more comfortable than Bodhinyana Monastery. So why do you stay there, you three over there, as we just drove in from Bunyan? What are you staying there for? You have a much easier time in jail. There's something different there. It's not just convenience. It's not like physical comfort. It's not just how much you have. It's how much you want. And how contented you are with what you have. And just the whole ethos of even Buddhism is not to look at what's missing, but to look at what you have. Even, you know, in relationships. Stop looking what's wrong with your partner. Looking what's right with them. No one's perfect. That story I told, I keep on telling this story. But it's one of the most brilliant ones. The most perfect tree in the forest is never the one which is straight. The most perfect tree in the forest is the one which is bent, crooked, and damaged. They're the ones I always like to have a look at. They've got character. They're bent all over the place. They've got knocks and marks here. Places where the branch has been torn off by the storms. In those holes, that's where we do have a few possums in monastery and some other beautiful little animals. That's where they live. That's their home. It's supposed to be there. And I've never yet seen a straight tree. They're always bent somewhere or other. And they're beautiful. What is actually saying there? Why is it we always think, what's missing, what's wrong? Don't look what's missing, what's wrong, look what's right. It's beautiful. You don't have to be perfect. Staying in a monastery, the food is not perfect, there's a lot of it. But sometimes you say, why is it that this strawberry ice cream always goes on the spaghetti bolognese? Not perfect, but it's fun and you enjoy it. You're happy to be there. And when I saw that, happy to be there, when I don't want anything in the whole world, that is contentment. That is the important part of the Buddha's path. It's not trying to get more. It's not even trying to fix up problems from the past. It's spending these moments just noticing, as I've often said, the most beautiful sunsets over the Indian Ocean. Or when there's some clouds, or there's some dust, or there's some smoke on the horizon. You do need something to spread those beautiful crimson and gold colors at sunset. Often in this country, in Perth, it's just such clean air, mostly. The sun sets, you just see the red ball of the sun going down. It's beautiful, but it's never as amazing as well as a few clouds or dust or smoke or something there to spread the beautiful colours of sunset. Goals right across the horizon. That's my idea of perfection. People think we should always have, please excuse me, equity, respect, fairness. If everything was really fair, you wouldn't have the opportunity to give to those people who have less. If everybody was healthy, we wouldn't have the opportunity to look after those who are sick. If everybody was well fed, we wouldn't have the opportunity to see someone and give them a meal. Sometimes the inequalities of life, that is where, and we all eventually have both sides of the spectrum, those inequalities of life, that is actually where the beautiful emotional qualities of forgiveness. You've hurt me, but I'm not going to hurt you back. That you owe me, but I'm going to let it go. That you've taken my food. Please take it. It's yours. Those beautiful attitudes between human beings, where we just don't think what's in it for us. It's not my desires. It's what do you need? How can I help? How can I give to you? Even things which are not necessary. Like me going off to that Singapore years ago. The lady involved was just so surprised that I accepted the invitation, just went. She couldn't believe it. The time, even just in my own family, I do have a family of blood family, blood relatives. And there was this time that my brother said, your nephew is getting married. He's getting married in England. And I'd never really done much for him. I was supposed to be his uncle. I can't give him any money because I haven't got any. I can't sponsor something or take him out for dinner or take him to a nightclub or something. Imagine Brahma in a nightclub. I wouldn't know what to do. I used to be able to know what to do, but not these days. Even yesterday, if anyone complains, because yesterday it was live streamed with the indigenous leader, Sean. He wanted everyone to try and do some indigenous dancing. So I was over there, just moving my legs back and forth. But it was so bad, it doesn't count as dancing, so I don't break my rules. It was just like joining and being kind to everybody who was here. But anyway, so what I did do, I was giving some talks in Europe at the time. So I thought, wow, if I arrange this and arrange that and arrange something else, maybe I can make it to his wedding. But it was really uncertain because it was so tight and I had to do too much arranging. And eventually, it was all working out. You know what life is like? It's amazing. Everyone was coming up. Somebody was picking me up from the airport and giving me a place to stay at night time. And somebody was coming early in the morning to take me all the way in the Lake District. I don't know why people want to be married in Lake Districts. But anyway, there must be some reason. It's such a long way away. Anyway, I managed to get up early and get someone to try and get up early. They try and get up early because they got up late. And so we were late leaving. And it was just touch and go. Will I get to the wedding in time? And those are people who know the UK. There's motorways. That's basically the only way to get there. And there was unfortunately a big crash on the M6 motorway. And there was about a 6-mile queue. A traffic jam. That's a long queue. And even though we'd left basically in time to get there, the time was slipping away as we waited in the queue. And my driver, he was from Perth, but was working in England. He was Thai. sadhu sadhu retires because they got faith. They got faith. If you're driving a monk, you don't have to worry about the police. So he went in the emergency lane. I was speeding down the M6, and all these people in I could see them from my window in the cars and the lorries. They were giving him the fingers. It's amazing what you learn as a monk. We just got there about 2 or 3 minutes late. Wedding was supposed to start at a certain time, and we didn't make it on the time, 2 or 3 minutes late. But those of you who know about weddings, on weddings, the bride always, on purpose, arrives late. So everybody was sitting down, including the marriage celebrant, because they didn't know if I was going to come or not. They're all sitting down there, just waiting for the bride to arrive. Yes, that's exactly what happened. The bride never turned up, but somebody else in a robe started coming down the aisle. Me. It's really making an entrance. I really enjoyed that one, making an entrance. And it's only my brother. He was the only one who knew I might make it. And everyone else said, "What the heck are you doing here?" And my nephew, "I'm not marrying you." That was wonderful, just the joy there. Just doing something, special for a nephew on a special day, his marriage day. Oh, I just felt so happy just going such an extra mile, many miles, to be able to get there in time. And the Thai faith was true. I don't know how he got away with that, but there's no tickets, no speeding fines, and nothing. His faith works. I'm not going to try that again, though. But anyway, just that beautiful kindness which you have to get there on time for something which is important to me and important to my nephew. And how on earth did that work? It worked because of just some kindness and some joy, some happiness. Never underestimate the power of that in our world. And maybe just yesterday, just having fun and friendship with an indigenous group of people. So many years ago, I mentioned to Sean that many, many years ago, I was invited to give the sermon at St. George's Cathedral on a Sunday Mass. Not Mass, it was like a Eucharist, that's the word it was, on a Eucharist. And a friend at the time, good old John Shepherd, he was the dean there. And he said, and I don't need to doubt him, he said, "This is the first time in 2,000 years that a non-Christian has given a sermon at a Sunday Eucharist." Oh, that was wonderful. I enjoyed that so much. Because half the people there were from the BSWA, Buddhists, and half of them were Christians, Anglicans, and no one knew who was who. They're all mixed up. Isn't that beautiful? There's something about that sort of kindness, that friendliness, that non-judgmental, just looking at somebody and seeing their goodness, not what their religion is, not what their race is, not where their gender is, not where their age is, not where their disability or lack of disability is. Just people being human beings, kindness. And that becomes a currency which will never lose its value. Dollars, baht, ringgit, rupee, they all lose their value, or they go up in value. But kindness, gentleness, never does lose its value. That's one of the reasons why people love coming to places like Bodhnyana Monastery or Dhammasara. They like going there. Why? Because it's rich. A wealthy monastery. Not in money, but in kindness and forgiveness and gentleness. And who can beat that? So in our modern world, that if we can learn how just to see things in a different way, what's really, really valuable, what do you really need to rely on in your life. Good friends, what we call Kalyanamitta in Buddhism. Kindness, genuine kindness. Where you're not wanting to get anything out of anybody. You just want the opportunity to give and to serve. That's all we want. So please, give me the opportunity to give more talks. What have I said? Oh my goodness. Okay. So, thank you for listening. Time is just going so fast. And has anyone got anything to say after that? I know there's talks on the internet over there. They're coming up soon. But before the internet, how about anyone here? Wow. You know that when you're giving a talk and everyone is silent, there's two reasons for that. Either they can't understand a word you're saying, or they're impressed. I hope it's the second one. So anyway, let's get some questions. You got the question? You haven't got it? Yeah. Okay, very good. Here we go. Faster, 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 faster. There we go. Thank you so much. Here we go. Oops. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Yeah? No. There we go. No. Here we go. In the United States, France, Malaysia, Poland, Western Canada, you know, these talks are very popular all around the world. That's why, there's another little story which you probably remember, that when I was over in UK, it was the last year, and I was going from the underground to catch a train from Paddington Station to Oxford to give the next talk. You know, you don't need money anymore, you just have Oyster cards and get these tickets online or whatever before you go. And I was just minding my own business, walking through the concourse of Paddington Station in West London, which is really a lot of people there. And this woman came running towards me. And she was African English, maybe about 25, 28 years of age, around that age. She came right up to me. Maybe she's listening this evening. If you are, be here, please. How are you? And I'll always remember you. So I'll almost always forget you. That was a bit of a sip. No, I'll always remember you. Because what you said was just so nice. She looked at me, she ran towards me and said, "Are you the YouTube monk?" That's what she called me, YouTube monk. And before I could answer, she said, "Yeah, you are, it's you." And then she got serious, the excitement sort of went down a bit. And she said, "You saved my life. Thank you. I don't know what you're doing here, but thank you." And I said, "What happened?" And like many people in our world, they went through a relationship breakdown. And they can be just so tough. And people can feel they're even suicidal. She said she was suicidal. And she tried to see the GP, see the psychologist, psychiatrist, her friends. She said nothing worked. Nothing. Until somebody said, "Well, maybe try some of these talks from Ajahn Brahm." And so she went online, had a look at one or two. She said, no, she had a look at one, which was blown away, and listened to about six or seven, one after the other, the first time. She said, that was the end of my problems. And she shared it with all the others, all of other friends. Imagine what that means to me. This is such a gorgeous gift she gave me. That, it works. At least it worked for her. Made my day. So anyway, in USA, how does one learn to be gentle, charming, and smiling in public? Is it okay to fake it until you learn it? Yeah, fake it is much better. But after a while, it's much more fun being smiling and in public and charming and gentle. First time, when I went to Thailand to become a monk 46 years ago, the cheapest flight was Aeroflot. That's the Soviet airline from London to Moscow and Moscow to Bangkok. And that was a very scary airline, believe me. It was the cheapest because no one wanted to fly it. And now, you've all had experiences in aircraft, and this is no joke. It's funny, but it's true. You know, I was maybe an hour into the flight, and then a flight attendant walked past and said, excuse me, can I have a cup of tea? And this flight attendant is not like, you know, some very gorgeous TIE flight attendant. This lady looked like she'd been in the Soviet Union Olympic weightlifting team. She was big. And she turned to me, and her face was just so incredibly scary. She said, "Yes!" Which means no. I've never seen that before. Flight service, you just ask a simple, nice, quiet question, they say no. And I was quiet for the rest of the flight. But even then, I was a bit scared when you arrived, but you have all these guards there with machine guns and stuff, and the first guard I saw, I just smiled. And he gave me this beautiful smile back. That's what I remember of Russian troops in Moscow. So kind, so beautiful when they smile. But you've got to smile at them first, and then they'll smile back. So it's fun giving a smile to people. Don't you like being smiled at by people? Anyway, it's a good thing to do. So after a while, you train. And to do the training, like everything else, I don't know if you do dancing training or whatever training you actually do, train in front of a mirror. You know what's coming next, don't you? My first teacher taught me this. He looked at me, and I looked a bit miserable when I was a student. And he said, first thing you do when you get up in the morning, you go to the toilet. Either before you relieve your bowels or afterwards, it doesn't matter. He said, look at your face in the mirror and smile at yourself. Now, I don't know if you remember student life. You know, at that time, you don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's about the time you go to bed. Sometimes. So, you know, you have your friends and your girlfriends, and you stay up late at night, and I said, look, if I looked at my face in the mirror when I first get up, I'd be afraid. And he said, no, do it. He said, get your two fingers, he said, side of the mouth, and push up. And I had enough trust and courage. Why not? It doesn't cost anything. So for 2 years, without a break, I remember every morning I get up, even though I had a hangover, I used to drink when I was a student. Not all the time, but, you know, a lot of the time. That's really crazy. And sometimes you look at it, you know what, looking your face in the morning when you had a long, hard night. Look at but I get my two fingers and I'll push up. And I saw this young student making a face in the mirror. And I couldn't help but laugh. Every morning for 2 years, I laughed at myself. What a wonderful training that was. That's how you learn how to smile. Training. People like to go on runs and jog and do push-ups. I like doing push-ups. I still do about 10 push-ups every morning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Why not? Anyway, so that's how you can be happy in public. You train until it just gets stuck that way. From France, I'm a beginner in meditation, and during a meditation I have a lot of commentaries and thinking in my head how to stop it. Don't try and stop it. Don't try and control it. The thoughts are there, they're just like clouds in the sky. So if you've got clouds in the sky, can you stop the clouds coming? No, you just let them come, let them go. That way you don't react. But try not to give things names. Sometimes, you know, what are they? Just a thought coming in the mind. Comes and goes, but it's not yours. That's a trick. It's not my thoughts. It's just thoughts, they come, they go. I'm just sitting there in the moment, just being. Thought comes, not my thought. Goes, not my thought. Then after a while, they just stop coming. Don't own them. From Malaysia, my life is crumbling because I'm 60 plus, just like me. And I still need to work for a living, just like me. And I've lost my small income. That's not like me. I never had an income. I feel very depressed and apprehensive. Please, can you advise? Yeah, it's... Have you got a family from Malaysia? Have you got friends who care about you and love you? If you have, your life never crumbles. You can always just stay with a brother or a sister or something. You can do so much little things like just help with just parking the car or just washing the car or cooking for people, being a house person. So much you can do. And maybe 60 plus, oh, so much wisdom which you've had over the years. Go and see if you can volunteer to teach in a kids' school, especially primary school. Primary school kids and elderly people, they get on so well. So just don't just sit there and do nothing. Just go outside and do nothing. But if you think, oh, my life is crumbling, it's all going wrong, whoa, that makes you depressed, which means you don't really engage anything in the world. So look at your family and have a bit of fun with your friends. There's so much you can do. When I sing in Malaysia, I expect you are a Buddhist. You can go to as many of these Buddhist places in Malaysia, and they can spend all day playing mahjong, or just like the Thai people I was saying. It's just so nice now we haven't got the lockdown that much anymore. So they say, oh, the Thai people come to Monastery, coming here on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon. Yeah, they offer food to the monks as soon as possible, and they get outside, and they spend the rest of the next 2 or 3 hours just eating and talking, talking and eating, eating and talking, talking and eating. I just can't... It's true, isn't it? You know that. I can't understand just how much you eat. And even it's harder how much you talk. They never get fat. It's weird. Anyway, but they have a wonderful time. Just eating and talking, talking and eating. Something really simple, but with their friends, cracking jokes. And our place gives an opportunity to do that. Have a wonderful time together. And their husbands are very happy to send their Thai wives to the monastery for the day or the afternoon, because they know they don't spend anything. Otherwise, go to the shopping centres and goodness knows, and that's the end of their salary. From Poland, I'm 20 and deciding on what path to choose in my life. I don't see any advantage in staying as a layperson. I think it only stuns my path towards letting go. What to do? Then become a monk. But it's very hard because we don't have enough monasteries, especially in places like Poland, to be monks and nuns. So let's see if we can build some. And little by little, that Poland used to be a wonderful country. It was a very religious country. But you know, sometimes when people have power in religion, sometimes the whole thing gets corrupt. Hopefully, in this place, that the monk doesn't have so much power. And it is true, isn't it, Venerable Nibuto, that sometimes I do get outvoted. He had to say that, otherwise I'll... Which means that, you know, you're not the big boss all the time. So it's nice when you take away the authority from people so that they're not always in charge. And you choose a nice path in life. Sometimes it's an interesting time after COVID. So the world is changing very fast at the moment. So many just opportunities, not to make money, so many opportunities to make a life, to make kindness, to make friendships, to make something different in this world. So the lay person which you thought of, you don't want to become. If you can't even become a monk, there's so many other opportunities. And just go out there in the world and see what's available. You can always help, serve, be kind. Get a skill which can help others. And it's not just like the normal lay life. So I'm not quite sure what's around in Poland, but give it a try. And this is from Western Canada. After last night's talk, are there karmic origins of social injustice like genocide? The karmic origins, there's no really such thing as like group karma. You know, that's when, you know, like a government creates karma. And genocide, sometimes the karma there of genocide is because people have, I think it's what they call tribalism. My group, my people, my religion, my part of my religion, the subsect of the subsect of the main sect of the big sect of my religion. You know what it's like. We don't like your religion. We don't like you. Why? It's one of the nicest things that a place like Australia, we meet one another, we marry one another, and there's an opportunity there for us to learn together, play together, understand one another. It's one of the wonderful things about last night, just the very fact that the indigenous, I said, well, indigenous, that's his external, he's a very nice friend, Sean, that was sitting here. I was sitting here. The very fact that we were together for that evening was probably more important than anything else. Invited in. Never kept out. Never thought that you don't belong. Genocide, we want to try and get rid of people we think don't belong. We always say the trees and the forest are the best. And one of the stories I wanted to tell last night, and be the last story, it was, I don't know, indigenous people, Muslim people, LGBTQIA plus, whoever you are. There was this story of this old man who was very poor but worked very hard up in some remote area of Australia in the bush. And one day, no electricity, no TV, he looked after his children, girls and boys, and they all did well at school and they went to universities, and he was so proud of their achievements, but he could never go and visit them because he was too poor. Then one day, the children got together, and out of gratitude for their father, they bought him a ticket to visit the city. It's the first time he'd been in the city in his life. And I don't know, some of the elderly people, they're just so inquisitive. So he wanted to listen and hear and explore everything. And he heard, when he was walking down part of Perth, heard this terrible, terrible noise. And most people would just walk away. But he said, no, I want to find out where this comes from. And in a small room, in the back of a house, he saw a young boy with a violin in his hand, scraping the strings, making a terrible sound. He was not educated, this old man. And he said, that is a terrible instrument. Whoever wants to hear a violin ever again? The next afternoon, that afternoon, different part of town, and he heard the most delightful sound. It was just so sweet and joyful, and it just almost like brought tears to his eyes. And he followed that sound to its source. And again, in a front room of another building, there was an old woman playing a violin. She was a maestro. She'd learnt that violin, practiced it all her life. You can see how sweetly she played. And the old man realized his mistake. It's okay to make mistakes. He learnt from it. He said, it wasn't the boy's fault. He's just learning the skills. And he said, that's just like religions in our world, politics, whatever. There's some people who haven't learnt how to play their instrument properly yet and make terrible noises. Violent people, angry people, people who just want to destroy. But there's other people who make such beautiful sounds. And people who just make violence, disturb others or whatever, there's nothing wrong with them. They just haven't learned yet how to play their instrument sweetly. But the next day, that old man heard the most wonderful sound in the whole world, which surpassed the sound of a maestro playing the violin. Sometimes, it's getting a bit late now, so sometimes I ask you what you thought that sound was. But it was an orchestra. It was the most beautiful sound for two reasons. First, everyone who was playing in that orchestra, whether it was the horns or the violins or the cellos or the wind instruments, the flutes or the drums, even the person playing the triangle was a maestro of the triangle. So number one, they'd all learned how to be so good at their own individual instrument. And secondly, they'd all learned how to play together in harmony. What a beautiful sound that was. And he said, what a wonderful world it would be if all the different religions, sects of the religions, all the different people, no matter what age, what gender, what race, if we all learn how to master our indigenous culture, if you're indigenous, to master your Buddhism if you're Buddhist, to master your football skills if you play for the Eagles or whatever, to master whatever you're good at, and then come and play together in harmony. What a wonderful world that would be. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so, when we were doing the in lockdown stuff, I gave a blessing at the end. I feel in the mood to give that blessing again, so I'm going to give the blessing and then we can do the bowing.
Sabaroga Winimuto Sabasanta Poachito Sabawera Mati Gando Nibuto Jatu Wang Poasabitio We were chanting Sabarogo, we nasa to mate bawan, wantarayo, sukiti gayu gopawa, apiwadanha, silitsa nicha, Uta prachalino chataro dhamma watanti ayuvano sukhang balam.
Very good. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah. Okay, now let's bow three times. We usually, let's just bow.